Hey folks, Carl Castagnetti here, and in association with NintendoWorldReport.com, ChildsPlayCharity.org, and listeners just like you, this is part two of Radio for Nintendo, doing it live for the kids. Up next, you'll be getting your radio trivia fix via our own Michael Cole, and in the second hour, we'll have Craig Harris on the line, talking about his time at IGN and what he'll be setting his sights on in the future. Just as in part one, there are going to be some technical issues that we just aren't able to fix in post, including volume levels, crosstalk, and some call dropouts. Even with all of the aforementioned, it's still a really great show, and I know you'll enjoy it just as much as I did. So, without further ado, here's part two of Radio Free Nintendo, doing it live for the kids.
And Jared is going to come on as our assistant for the next hour. Aaron, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
Hey, how's my sound? Man.
Pretty good.
Sounds good.
Okay,
good.
Great.
And let's see. I'm just clearing up the conversation list here a little bit, or trying to. And, yep, Jared's going to be your assistant. So if you're in the chat, what is Jared's chat name? Anybody know?
It's a Penguin of Time.
Penguin of Time. Okay. So if you have a comment for us and you want to make sure that we see it, send a PM or just get Jared's attention. He is Penguin of Time in the chat. And he will be forwarding comments to us. And if you want to call in at the end of the hour, I assume we'll still do that probably, this segment. But if you want to call in, the Skype name is the same. So Jared is going to be logging into Skype with the same information Carl had. So that won't change. It'll still be RFN Live Assistant on Skype. And hope we continue to get these really good call-ins. That's been fun. I'm still excited about that opportunity to talk to people live. So, all right, Jared is here. I believe he is in the chat now.
All right. So let me know when you're ready to kick this off.
We're ready, and
we're ready to go, man.
I'm probably going to step out for a little bit and mute myself, but I'll still be listening. So if you guys need anything from me, just let me know, okay?
All right.
Cool. And it's all in TYP's court. If you've never played Radio Trivia, get excited because this is going to be really fun.
Wow. No Johnny, no Greg. Okay, here we go. So before we get started, I want to give you a little bit of history on Radio Trivia here. And so it's a decade-old tradition at this point. It actually started in 1999 as a live format show, kind of like this, where it would be hosted by either Johnny, Evan Birchfield, or myself. And we'd play music from video games, and people would guess the game in IRC chat room. So once again, not too much unlike what we're doing today. And then we'd of course talk about the game some after we revealed the what game it was. So in 2007, I moved over to a podcast format. You can go there on the website, NintendoWorldReport.com. It's called Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. We've been doing that since 2007. It comes out roughly every 2 weeks. And it's usually myself plus a rotating co-host, so Johnny or Greg or James or someone else from the website. So for this special, I have four games selected, and I'm going to be playing three songs from each game. So game one, song two, song three. And the games may or may not have been used in the podcast. That is not a criteria. So some games are new. Some games I've used before in other formats. And between song two and song three, I'm going to have a hint question. And so it's going to be partially a trivia question and partially kind of a way to figure out, maybe I know what game it is now. And what makes this live here is we're going to actually want listeners to call in while we're playing those songs to our assistant. And then after the third song, you're going to get a chance to guess what game it is. And if you're right, you should win a prize. We do have prizes for everyone, right? I think everyone who's in charge of prizes has left now. John, can you confirm we have prizes?
Yes, I can confirm that we do have prizes. Actually, we have plenty. We have more than we thought we would. We have all kinds of random crap to send out to people. By crap, I mean amazing stuff.
All right. Well, John, would you be able to take care of what prize goes to which winner or the assistant, perhaps?
Absolutely.
All right, so that's the format. Hopefully everyone understands. We'll be patching you in after song three so you can guess. With that, we're a little, you know, tight on time here, so we're just going to get started. This is the first game. It's the first song as well. So here we go. Please do remember to mute your mics so that we don't get feedback. I have been told that the chat room limit has been fixed, so if you've been trying to get into the chat room but have failed miserably, try again. It might work now. Hopefully you guys are able to hear. I know that this isn't the ideal format because it's live and streaming. So the quality is better on the actual podcast. I apologize if there's some clipping or some packets being dropped so that you can't hear everything and it's cutting in and out. But
I'm hearing perfectly, so.
All right. Well, once again, if you think you know it, coordinate with our assistant, who is Jared for this hour, and he'll patch you in to make your guess, and you might win a prize. Let's go on to the second song. That was the second song. Once again, if you think you know this, coordinate with Jared in the chat room, or if you aren't in the chat room and you still want to participate, if you have your Skype account and Skype open, you can contact the RFN Live Assistant. That's all one word, RFN Live Assistant, and chat with him, and he'll coordinate and hopefully patch you in. So for those who are scratching your heads, we have a question that'll help you maybe.
I am so one of those people scratching my head.
All right.
For sure.
The main hero of this game changes from one character class to another in the course of the game. What are the two classes in question? That's it. That's your third song. So it sounds like no one's able to get connect via Skype. So Jared has selected a guest from the chat room here. And Zap thinks it is Lufia 2, Rise of the Sinistrals. So what do you guys think on the air here? Aaron?
Should be Final Fantasy 4, I believe.
John, what do you think it is?
Yeah, that I'm trying to remember which game that Johnny reviewed in which I think it was one of the Dragon Quest games. My guess is like Dragon Quest 4, one of the DS re-releases that Johnny reviewed and loved. That's my guess.
Any other guesses?
That's it. I mean, it's definitely, it sounds like that the last music track on there, definitely it's something from Square Enix for sure.
Okay. Well, Ardvarkoquin also thinks it's Dragon Warrior 3. No one is correct on this. This is Final Fantasy. Megabyte got it. Aaron got it. It's Final Fantasy 4. This is the DS remake. But I would have accepted Final Fantasy 4, whatever. So this is the remake for DS. Very pretty. I think you've talked about it on the podcast before. It was my first introduction to Final Fantasy, and it's a very good game. So, I don't know. John, have you played the game? Or
I have not played it, but is this the one? I'm probably getting the two mixed up, but I remember Johnny reviewed either the Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy game, one of the remakes, and he just loved it. And it's the one where your hero, where you play quite far into the game and then you completely switch around. Like you basically toss your old character and you change completely into a different character.
Right. So the main character starts off kind of working for the evil empire as a dark knight, mm-hmm. and eventually transforms into a paladin by confronting his evil self, basically. So that was the hint question there. A funny little anecdote I wanted to share about this is that Final Fantasy is kind of one of those games that everyone, or series that a lot of Japanese people played, at least when they were younger. And so, like, I had a discussion about this game with my Japanese coworkers when I was living in Japan, where they were saying, I remember I was playing the game where Final Fantasy IV, which is the one you go to the moon on. You know, it's like these people that don't play games at all anymore still have fond memories of Final Fantasy IV. It's just sort of part of Japanese culture, which is, I thought, pretty cool. So we got to move on to the next game here. Hopefully someone will be able to get this one right, and we can give them a prize. What prize are we going to give away for this, by the way? Are we giving away T-shirts, or we got something else that's good?
Let's see. I don't know. I don't really know who set up the prizes for this guy. We have a whole bunch. Johnny could probably be a better authority on that one.
Hey. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So the situation with prizes is we have a whole list on the blog page. It's below the chat. If you just scroll down, you'll see it. And you can pick whatever you want from that list.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
It's up to you. Your choice. That way we don't end up sending a DS game to somebody who doesn't have a DS and, you know, some kind of whatever.
Yeah. All right.
So you get whatever you want from that list.
Okay. Pick one. Okay. Well, there we go. So... Colin, guess.
By the way, I was on the phone with Carl just now. Did nobody get Final Fantasy II?
No! Four.
Holy crap. I knew that from like three notes in on the first song.
I know.
Yeah, I've never played it, but the hint, I remember Johnny on actually on one of our older podcasts talking about how it was so unique and the way that your character completely changed around. Yeah. And so I knew it was either that, but I got it mixed up with one of the Dragon Quest remakes.
People, step up your game.
Yeah,
you got
come
good
on.
Devices here. They're easy to win.
I think one guy on the chat room actually did get it, but he didn't PM it. So I guess we should tell people how to PM. Some people are confused.
Go ahead.
If you click on Penguin of Time's name and then hit query, it should bring up a box and you can just type in the answer to him.
Right. Or once again, if you have Skype and you want to come on the air for the guests and to talk about the game, you can coordinate that through Jared as well, Penguin of Time.
Yep, just send a Skype IM to RFN Live Assistant. And by the way, I was just talking to Carl about this, but we thought some people might not be trying to call him because they don't understand Skype or they don't know what's involved. Skype is a free program. You can get it on pretty much any platform, including your phone. So if you're listening and you don't have Skype but you're interested, check it out. Look it up online. You can create an account in about 30 seconds, and then you can call in and talk to us. If you have a microphone, a headset, you're good.
Yep, that's all it takes.
I think even on iPhone you can do it. So,
and PSP actually, I think, has it too.
That's right, PSP.
Oh,
if you're listening to this,
five of you out there,
PSP,
have
God forbid.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
And it's free, so you don't have to pirate it either.
I'm going
to
shut up now, so you guys can move on with radio trivia. But good lord, people, good lord, you got to get that. You got to get Final Fantasy. Come on.
All right, here we go.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was the first song. You got two more, so maybe you guys are holding off. I don't know. Maybe you're being timid on your guesses. So on to the second song. I don't want to reveal it prematurely because it sounds like we do have someone who wants to dial in after the third song. But we will take multiple dial-ins. And the first person on who gets it right will win a prize. So just go ahead. Once again, that's RFN Assistant on Skype. All right. So I want to make a correction. I misspoke. The correct Skype name is RFN Live Assistant. I won't say the wrong one again. It's RFN Live Assistant. So here's your hint question. So when you free a captured ally in a level, what happens? What happens that every time you free a captured ally?
Oh, you're killing me.
Ugh. right. There we go. So we do have someone waiting in the wings to guess this time. So, Jared, could you help us out here and drag him into the chat? Drag. Don't, like, hurt him.
I want to kill our listeners.
This should work. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
All right.
Hello.
Hey. I'm stuck now.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Hello? We can hear you just Hello. Fine. You're there. Yep. Are you there?
Okay. Let me mute the thing for a second. I think I'm like delayed feedback.
Yeah, please, when you dial in, guys, turn down the stream or turn it off. Let me know when you're ready.
I am ready.
All right. So,
have to pull that hard. I mean, I was more than willing to come.
Came in here willingly?
Yeah.
All right. All right, so GX Echidna, what game do you think this is?
I know it is Wario Land Shake It for the Wii.
Yes, it is. You got it. We have a winner. So
yes.
We've got a bunch of prizes here. Let's see here. What can we give away?
If it's still up for grabs, that Prinny doll sounds pretty good.
All right. I believe it is up for grabs. No one's gotten that prize yet, right?
That is correct.
All right. Well, you get yourself a nice pretty plush doll.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And GX Echidna, what's your name? Is that what you want us to call you?
Chris.
All right, Chris.
All right.
So send your contact information to Jared. All right. You can either do it over Skype with an IM or you can do it in the chat room either way. But he will take that down and we'll make sure we get that to you as soon as we can.
Okay. And were you going to let another person try to answer the trivia or...
We could do that. You know what? I'm worried about time here. I got to get through two more games. So,
do you want to try it, Chris?
But do you want to give it a try?
I love that game. I mean, I know I can very well relate to another host who also does as well. But as soon as you get the little pixie fairy, whatever it is at the end, basically timer starts and you have to jet back to the beginning of the stage.
That's right. Yeah, there's an escape sequence, which is, it feels very different from the first half of a level, and it's a lot of fun. Before you go, is there anything about the game you want to mention being particularly fun or memorable?
It's the way that it takes some of the general Mario-style platform mechanics and just turns them on end, just completely ignores everything, and just the way that it's evolved from the series. I love the intricacy of it. So,
yeah, it's a really good game. If you have not checked it out yet, please do. I'm sure you can find it somewhere, probably at a discount these days.
Probably on my shelf.
So, John, are you telling me you bought the game but have not played it?
No, that's actually one I have not bought. That one I've it's in my Wii backlog to buy. I have backlogs that are actually physical games on my shelf, and then there's a backlog that I have to buy. So it just goes from backlog to backlog. So you wait in one line, you wait in the other. It's your choice. Game.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Chris. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
That's your prize.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I figured you should. Thought that one might go quickly.
Yeah, well, all right. So I do believe there's someone else who's in the wings. If you want to hold on, you can guess for the next game. All right, let's go on to game 3. All right. Love that song. Just an update on the RFN Live Child's Play donation. I'm sorry, I don't even know what to call this thing. The progress in our donations. We have
the donation bucket.
$1,335. The donation bucket has $1,335 right now from 77 contributors. Once again, this is for Child's Play. It's for the kids, folks. So
yep. We're at 27% of our goal, so let's just keep pushing it through, and we'll keep podcasting as long as you keep dropping money in the bucket. I'd like to thank all the contributors so far.
For the kids. Great.
For the kids.
Here's your hint question, everyone.
Bring it. Lay it on me.
All right. Part of this title pays homage to primarily to which long-running RPG franchise? Here we go. Okay, so my understanding is that Yoshi 1001 believes knows the answer. So we're going to patch Yoshi 1001 in, if Jared would be so kind.
Yes, I'm. give me 1 second.
Our beautiful assistant, Jonathan Metz.
I'm the Vanna White of RFN Live.
What can I say?
He washed and combed his hair, especially for this broadcast.
All right, Yoshi should be getting a contact request from me on Skype. Yep.
Come on in.
Accepted. And I have to add this person to the chat here. And it's ringing.
I can barely stand it. The anticipation is killing me.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast.
Hey, I just got to turn my computer up a little bit.
All right. You sound good here, though.
Yeah, sound real good. So, Yoshi 1001, what should we call you?
Steven. I've requested many games for radio trivia. You've used such great suggestions of mine as recently Krusty's Super Fun House and the show.
All right.
Last time, I didn't unnecessary, TYP. Completely unnecessary.
I believe my comment form is wholly unfitting music, Batman.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on. So you're an expert. You're a seasoned listener of Radio Trivia. What game do you think this is?
This is Retro Game Challenge for DS.
It absolutely is Retro Game Challenge for DS. And just for kicks, what's the answer to the trivia question?
The trivia question, the answer is there's a sub-game within the game called Guadia Quest, or however that's pronounced. And it's actually a sort of a semi-tribute/parody of Dragon Quest, as I understand.
Absolutely. All right. Awesome. Well, what gift would you like? What present would you like?
I'll pick out actually probably something either on – I don't want to take any of the physical prizes away from anyone. So I was going to pick – let's see. What is it? WiiWare or VC game. I haven't decided just yet. Can I get back to you guys a little bit later after I've looked over the list?
Yes, sure. You can. Do you have a US Wii?
Live it over in Madison, Wisconsin, so I'll have to boot it up and get my system code and send that to you guys. I wanted to say a little bit about the game very quickly. If you have not played it, do whatever you need to, dig it up on eBay or whatever. It's got some rough edges. I really think they should have gone like the Layton route and combined the first two games in the series. Because then they would have had a really good game. I think they could have XC could have done a bang up job selling that one. But if you love 8-bit video games, definitely pick this one up. Whatever you need to do to get it, it is absolutely great. I think the best games are the first and third songs are from the best game on there. The Ninja Gaiden / Metroid combination, the Robot Ninja Hagelman 3. I think the second song is actually the end credits for the entire game, where it's actually a scrolling shooter. Or no, the first song is actually from
Star Prince, yes. I believe, was the
and the
first
second one I think is from the end credits of the entire game, where you take control of a spaceship and you actually go in and you shoot at the host of the TV shows based on Reno and try and you can actually, I guess, quote unquote, kill him if you're really, really good.
Really?
But thanks, guys. Really appreciate being on. Do you mind if I briefly give a little plug for my website?
Go ahead.
Okay. So I actually run something called the Pokemon Internet Radio Network. We're an internet radio station. We play lots of Pokemon stuff. I also have a news feed called PokePress, where I go out to like trading card and video game events, and I've even interviewed a couple of people who did songs for the TV show.
Wow.
So if you want to check those out, pokepress.blogspot.com and pirnradio.blogspot.com. Thank you very much, guys. Really a big fan of this all your podcasts, and I love listening. I always keep a couple episodes on my phone, so thank you, guys.
Awesome. Awesome.
Thanks for listening.
Great having you on.
By the way, before we move on, I have to very quickly thank Uncle Bob from the forums for donating those WiiWare VC games on Wii as prizes, and we really, really, really appreciate that. Uncle Bob's a big supporter of what we do, and I just wanted to get that out there.
All right, well, we have one final game here, and it looks like we're just about on schedule here for 1 hour. One last game here. Hopefully someone can figure this one out. It might be a little harder. I'm not sure. Might be a little harder.
Hey,
All right, that was the first song from the last game. Hopefully you guys could hear it. It sounds like we're having a little bit of audio problems, but hopefully that's cleared up now. So we're going to go on to the second song here.
That song is amazing.
All right. So we got
that. I have that on my iPod, actually.
Okay. That's a hint.
This game is most famous for which special attack?
Sexy dynamite.
Sexy dynamite.
All right, I think Jared has a contestant lined up, if I'm not mistaken. So who is going to be? Is it ZC Drake? Is that?
Yes, that's going to be our first caller with a guess here. So I'm adding this person. Apparently his name's Mike.
Oh yeah, great.
Another Mike. And he just shows up as Mike on Skype, so this is confusing.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. You're on the air.
Well, that's impressive.
All right, Mike.
A little bit quiet, though.
Yeah, sorry, I'm using a webcam. I don't have a...
Okay, no, it's sounding okay now.
It's all good, we can hear you.
Okay, so what game do you think this is, Mike?
My original guess was, from the second song, was Rhythm Tengoku, then now I'm thinking it's Choaniki.
Yes, it is. It is.
You are correct.
All right. I couldn't come on RFN to do a Radio Trivia special out choosing this game, especially since John was on. So
yeah, the first track,
John, for giving it away to me.
Yeah, it was. I couldn't help it. That's the thing. I actually didn't know it until the second one. The second one is, I mean, it gave it away to me.
He is right, though. I think the second one does sound a lot like a Rhythm Tengoku game.
Well, the second one's titled German Jammin', but I think with the accent, it sounds like Jammin'. It could be either
German Jammin'. The plot is ludicrous.
Yeah, German Jammin', whatever that means. I don't even want to hazard a guess as to where that's coming from.
I think there was a boss. I think it plays during a boss where, or it was like whatever, some German military guy is in a dirigible or something.
I don't. It could really be anything.
Yeah. So. Or you leave here. Well, you need to choose your prize too. I'm sorry. What prize do you want?
Let me double check that list.
Got a lot of swag and a lot of games too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So what's gone so far? The pretty plush doll's gone, and
one of the WiiWare VC games.
Yeah. So we got 3 Wii/VC games to go.
Steamboat Willie doll still there or no?
Absolutely, it's still there in my room right now. So, cool. You are welcome to have it. You actually know the answer to the question. Of course you do. What is the most famous attack from this game?
The man beam.
Yes.
Yeah, boy, you know it. You know it. Live by it.
This show too long not to know it.
Exactly.
Teach it to your children. Just keep it going, folks. Keep it going.
I don't want to go to jail for child abuse.
The cycle must continue. All right, well, just make sure you get your information to RFN Live Assistant on Skype. And actually, Andy Gergen has stepped in the role of the assistant. Thanks to Jared, and good job. And welcome, Andy. And Andy's going to be on the show a little bit later, too.
Excellent. Well, that was the last game, and we are pretty much out of time for this segment.
You know, we have just a couple of minutes here before Craig comes on, and why don't we take a caller... just take a caller and we'll ask you a trivia question. How about that?
Sounds awesome.
All right. Let's see. The next person that we had queued up already is, I think, Loretta. I'm going to send you a little request right now. Also known as B-Boy, apparently. And give me just 1 second.
While we're waiting for that, just remind you guys, if you enjoyed this segment, you can check this out. It's pretty much the same format. About every 2 weeks, it's the Radio Trivia Podcast Edition podcast. You can find it on our website. You can find it on iTunes. And it's more of stuff like this. So check it out.
That's right. Now, it doesn't look like B-Boy is on Skype. Oh, it hasn't accepted my request yet.
And if I could chill and shill, don't forget to donate. We're up to 28%, $1,410 right now, thanks to the 83 contributors out there, and we're still going.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next person because I haven't heard back yet from B-Boy. So the next one up will be Martin, I think. If you want a chance to call in here and talk to us for just a minute, maybe win a prize. We'll ask you a trivia question. But you do have to reply to my contact request if you want to do this. So look at Skype, and there might be like a notifications bar lit up, something like that. Come on, somebody! We're running out of time. We got Craig Harris waiting. Craig, are you here?
I am here.
All right. All right. We were gonna try to have some people call in, but that didn't work out. So try again later if you didn't get to call in. And now we have to move on, so we'll say goodbye to Radio Trivia. Of course, you can hear that every couple of weeks on the podcast. Definitely check it out. And we just missed Martin. Maybe we can get him back on later. We can't do it right now, Martin, but we'll try to get you back on later. So we are here with Craig Harris. Hey,
and
man,
this is where your podcast goes into its hour tailspin. How's it going, Craig?
Excellent.
You know, we just played music from Choaniki, so
oh man, I missed that.
You're overestimating the quality of what we do here.
So it's actually completely the opposite. This is where things just go into the stratosphere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Looking forward to it.
So, Craig, we'll just dive into it right now if you're ready.
No problem.
And by the way, if you're listening, stop and save your recording so we can – well, don't stop, but save your recording so we make that increment. And, yeah, we're going to drop a couple people off the call here to smooth this out. So let's see. Megabyte, I think he actually just – here we go. Got him off. John, you want to stay on right now?
Yeah, I'll stay on.
All right. And I'm going to bring Greg back. And James, too, James, you should be on the call. But if you want to talk, just pop on. And sorry, Craig, this is the live experience here.
I've never done a Skype thing. This is all brand new to me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we do GarageBand when we do our podcasts. So
okay.
The Skype thing.
We used to use GarageBand, and we had so many problems with it.
Well, that happens, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, we don't see Greg as being online. Is there?
Greg?
Hold on.
Is it Greg or Craig?
No, sorry. Greg. It's going to get confused here. I'm calling
Greg. Lost Greg.
Right now, so.
All right.
Greg, let us know if you get on the call. So, Craig.
Yes.
How are you doing, man? Are you still? We should say that a few weeks ago you departed IGN after what, 13 and a half years or something like that?
13 and a half years. I started in April of 97. And someone had asked me what my first game review was, and I had to think about it. I think it was when I sat in on, because I was hired to do Saturn World, and my first review was Fighters Megamix.
Oh, wow.
So I started on Fighters Megamix, and I ended with Donkey Kong Country Returns. So, I think I had a pretty good run.
Yeah, I'd say so. How many reviews would you say that you wrote? Do you have a count?
God, I think Pear, you know, did a count in our back end where it was like more than 1,200 that's on the site right now. There's 1,200 reviews from me. I mean, that doesn't include like the previews and the news stories that I've written and all that stuff. But that also doesn't include all the Saturn World stuff because back in the day, you know, this whole internet thing was all brand new. And one of the IT guys decided, you know, since Saturn World wasn't around anymore, hey, we'll just delete it. And so all the stuff that I did for Saturn World is gone. You might be able to find some of it on, I guess when you do the Wayback Machine, the archive.org. Yeah. You can find a little bit, but for the most part, there's no record of my first year at IGN.
Wow. Yeah, that's really a shame. I mean, my old website, Craig, you probably don't remember this, but I used to have a site called The Informant.
I kind of remember that.
It started in 99, and it was open for about 2-3 years. Two IP, I don't know if we have room on the call for you. I'm afraid it might get kind of laggy, but okay. But yeah, that was back in 99, so I've been doing this for 11 years.
Yeah.
About 11 and a half years, and there aren't many people who've been writing about Nintendo longer than me, but... When did you start? Because it was IGN Game Boy, right? Or IGN?
Pocket. Back in the day, in 2000 or 1999 or 2000. I can't remember the year, but I was working on the PlayStation side with Doug Perry, and we noticed that there was a lot of really cool games coming out for Game Boy Color, and so what happened was I was always been a big handheld gamer. I mean, I love the Atari Lynx, and I have the whole collection of Atari Lynx games, and I just love the whole pick up and play idea of handheld games. And so Paris said, hey, why don't, in the spare time, you and I just start writing reviews on Game Boy? And I just did that part in my spare time. And then when we did a relaunch of IGN's, I think we went from a black site to a white site. And so when we actually changed the structure of IGN,
I remember
Paris,
that.
Yeah, Paris like, hey, why don't you just do that full time? You become the full time editor of doing handhelds, and we called it Pocket.IGN. And so obviously it was the Game Boy was the driving force behind that, but then Neo Geo Pocket was out, and WonderSwan was coming out, and so we covered it all. But for the most part, it was mostly just to so we can cover Pokemon and have a place for it.
Yeah. I've seen a Wonderswan in my life. Singular. Yeah.
Well, so Craig, I
remember the first time I met you was back in 2000 at E3. And I don't know if you remember this particular event, but IGN, this was back during the IGN affiliate program.
Oh, yeah.
And
a disaster, by the way.
Well, yeah.
Oh, trust all the T-shirts.
That's how I found Planet GameCube.
Yeah, yeah. We were an affiliate, and actually at the time, I had nothing to do with IGN. I had a friend named Ben Cosmina, who you might actually know, Craig.
The name sounds familiar.
He used to work for. Oh boy, it was one of the really. It was like Euro Asian Game Boy Net, like EH.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so I had met Ben just kind of randomly waiting in line to get into E3, and we had become friends very quickly. And his site was an IGN affiliate, so he just said, "Hey, do you want to go to this party with me and meet some people?" I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And that's where I met Billy Berghammer, and that's part of the reason I was hired and am here now is because I was at that party.
It's who you know, not what do you know. So exactly. I mean, it's all about the networking.
Yeah. So at that party, there was a lot of stuff happened that night. I remember it quite vividly. There was an open bar and a guy doing satay chicken over in the corner. And all these pockets of journalists and people. And I remember that night, Matt Casamassina, we were gathered outside like on a, I don't know, like an outside balcony porch type area at the Ritz-Carlton. And he pulls a gecko chip out of his pocket. And was showing that off.
Oh, yeah, I do. I remember that too. Oh, man.
I don't know where he got that thing. It was really strange. Who carries a microchip around in their pocket of a system coming out for another year and a half?
Matt loved to show off.
It was a really weird thing. But, yeah, I remember that very vividly. And then I met you in the hallway later. And of course, I knew who you were. And so I was introducing myself and saying I was a big fan. And I said – I was just kind of joking around. I was like – do you ever resent Matt for sticking you with all these handheld games? I mean, do you ever – don't you ever get sick of hunching over your tiny Game Boy Color screen or whatever?
Yes, the original GBA, surely. Yeah. You must have resented that.
No, me, no, not at all. I mean, that's right. That was my thing. I loved handheld games. So, and Matt had no control. He wasn't my boss or anything. So it's not like Matt was giving me things to do. It's just, it was one of those things. It's just, sure, yeah, people can think that Matt's, giving me all the relics or whatever. But no, I had a great time playing on Game Boy stuff.
But I think your response was, actually, I play a lot of games on this thing, and you pulled a Wide Boy Advance out of your bag. And I'd heard rumors of this thing. I didn't even know if it actually existed at the time. And you pulled this thing out. And can you describe what that device was and what it did?
Now, maybe you can remind me, because there are a couple things that were called Wide Boys. So Wide Boy Advance,
So the original Wide Boy was an N64 cartridge with a Game Boy Color basically crammed into it.
Right.
So it could interface with the
N64.
Right.
But I only played Game Boy Color and Game Boy games. And then the Wide Boy Advance, now I got to remember this myself, but we had something called the AGB Capture. Now, is that what you're talking about?
Or is that something else? I thought the Wide Boy Advance was also an N64 cartridge.
It's like a big, giant, tall N64 slot with a bunch of cables coming out of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, man. I got to remember this myself. Because, the thing that I used to play Game Boy Advance games to capture screenshots and videos and stuff, it was called the AGB Capture. And it's this big silver box. And it has a Game Boy Advance tethered to this box. Mm-hmm. And so you would see that you would put the cartridge not in the cartridge out of the system, but into the box itself, and the cable that came out of the unit was plugged into where the cartridge would go on the Game Boy Advance. So now I gotta remember what this Wide Boy Advance thing was, because I know the name exists.
Maybe it was the Wide Boy 64.
The Wide Boy 64 was the big cartridge that you could play Game Boy Color. So maybe
that was the Game Boy Color. I might have it mixed up in my mind.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is, because if it was in 2000, this thing didn't exist because we weren't talking about Game Boy Advance at this point. Right. So it's called the Wide Boy 64. Yeah, giant cartridge. So you plug it in the N64 and you can play, Game Boy Color, Game Boy regular stuff on the system. The problem with that was it had this, you know how the N64 kind of had this weird filtering of all their games that had this dithering, or maybe everything made it look a little darker. And so that's exactly what happened with the Game Boy games. So it had this kind of blurriness to it. And while it was nice, you'd much rather play it on a direct system, even though there's no backlighting on it.
Cool. Well, of course, later on you covered GBA and DS and all that stuff, and then eventually took over the whole Nintendo thing. That was about the time Matt left, right?
Matt left. He left officially this year, but
when he became the editor at large.
Yeah, he became editor at large. I took over for the entirety of the Nintendo side. So all of Wii and all of Nintendo DS and all of anything that Nintendo was doing. So Matt really wanted to kind of do features. Matt was a huge feature guy, and he wanted to actually cover a lot of stuff. So like he was down in LA, and the guys up in, you know, the games division up in IGN were up in San Francisco, and it just kind of made more sense since Matt, you know, he's established to kind of do his own thing down in LA, and then have me take over because I was doing a lot of Wii stuff already, and I already had great contacts with Nintendo, and I already knew the system extremely well, so it made more sense for me to take over and have Matt do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask, I mean, you are one of the most experienced people in terms of working with Nintendo that I've ever met. I know a lot of people who do multi-platform stuff, and, you know, they've been in the game for 5 years or whatever, but you've had such a long-term history of dealing with Nintendo. What are your kind of thoughts on the corporate culture or maybe the frustrations of trying to be a member of the media covering Nintendo stuff?
Well, obviously, you know, in the early days, it was really tough to cover Nintendo, or actually cover anything. You know, when you're just you probably are familiar with this. You know, when you're an upstart website, you know, and you try and call these PR people for, you know, for product cover, you know, preview or review stuff, it's like they'll be like, who are you? What, you know, what's your readership like? Blah, blah, blah. So it started out like that. IGN was like that too. I remember the days that when I, you know, called around for product or for, you know, news or some comments to when I'm writing a news, that, you know, they'd be like, you know, we're IGN or Imagine Games now. We're going to be like, who? And I said, oh, it's the website version of the magazines, you know, like Next Generation. And they're like, oh, okay, I get it. But yeah. But we kind of established ourselves, and, you know, now, you know, when you call up, you know, you don't even have to say what, you know, you're from IGN. They know who you are already. So that's easy. However, now, kind of getting into the whole dealing with Nintendo. Nintendo of America is great. I mean, I'm, you know, who they got there, they know their stuff. But the problem is their hands are tied behind their back because of Japan. They can't really say much.
Right.
And it's frustrating for them, you know, as well as for us. If we want to cover something, you know, you might not be able to get anything out of Nintendo of America because it has to go through this whole chain of, you know, approval process through NCL.
Right.
And by the time you want to put something up, it's already passed. You know, you're on a website. You work on a daily deadline, not a magazine. You know, it's probably easier for magazines to work with Nintendo because there'll be a long stretch of time before, you know, like if you actually ask for a comment or you want to talk to Reggie, you know, it'll be a week before you get to talk to him. And that works out for a magazine, but not for a website.
Right. Yeah. I mean, actually speaking on that, I guess I can reveal a little bit of a secret here. But for the past week, we've been trying to work with Nintendo of America to get approval for Charles Martinet to be on the show. And it didn't come through in time, unfortunately. And I wasn't really surprised by that. But Charles wanted to do it. I contacted him and he was really gracious about it. And I thought, man, if we're doing a live radio show, to have the voice of Mario and Luigi and all that would just be incredible. You know?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I bumped into him at Gamescom. Was it back in August? And it was pretty cool. He was just hanging out, and I'm like, hey, we want to have a little bumper for our podcast.
Yeah,
and he just totally went off. He's so professional. He's really awesome.
I know. Yeah, we have one of those somewhere too. We never use it. We should find that. We actually, my favorite is the one we have from David Hayter, where he cues in Radio Free Nintendo in the voice of Solid Snake.
Nice.
It's pretty amazing. It's been a while since we used that one, but it's. That's amazing to listen to and think, wow, that's my show. Solid Snake's talking about my show.
Very cool.
So what are you up to now? What are your plans?
Well, right now, you know, like my last day was November 19th. So I've just been kind of kicking back and kind of relaxing. I was given an opportunity to kind of explore other options, and so I took it. And I've always kind of wanted to get into development. And
you were working on a game, weren't you, a couple years ago?
Couple. It was like back in when we had, you know, like when, you know, IGN had a ton of money to spend. So I actually, instead of, you know, this freelance money that we had to use, this is back in, you know, back when the internet was exploding and you're going to be a multimillionaire, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we had all this money to spend. And so since I didn't have anyone to do freelance writing for me, I'm like, well, I got to use this somehow. So I was like, I'll hire a programmer and some artists and we'll make a game. And that went very, you know, basically they probably spent about a couple months doing that, and then all of a sudden the bubble burst, and you know, we had cutbacks and layoffs, and I had to say, this game's over. We can't finish it. So it wasn't really going anywhere anyway. It was kind of a cool like a take on Rampage, but for the most part, it was basically just kind of like to do a really cool article that just on a weekly basis kind of documents what goes into making a game. If somebody like me who writes about games can make a game, then anyone can do it. But you know, I think we did about 9 or 10 articles on it, so that's 10 weeks before they pulled the plug on it.
Yeah.
So, but you know, what I want to do is I don't want to jump into a position where I'd be in over my head. So, I mean, I'm not going to be like this head designer of anything. That's not going to happen. I'm not a programmer. I'm not an artist.
I'm not going to have any experiences like Jeff Green, who had to put a box somewhere in an EA game in My Sims Agent or whatever
that's
the hell
amazing
it was.
Story.
No, I don't want to do that. But you know, I've had a bunch of really great conversations with developers all over the country, and no job offers yet, but everything's going really well. So I have a feeling I'm not going to disappear, and I have a feeling you're probably going to see me pop up somewhere, you know, in 2011. Absolutely.
I'm excited to see what you do next. So in terms of there's an interesting relationship, I think, between game reviewers and developers and what we think of each other.
Yeah.
And speaking of that Jeff Green article, I heard him tell that story on a podcast, and then later he wrote an article for EGM about it, and I read it there too. And I think one thing he mentioned in both cases is that having that experience of feeling so helpless and realizing how complicated and technical it is to do even a seemingly very minor task in a game development made him feel like he had been too harsh on certain games or something like that. I thought that was really strange. I mean, especially a guy with so much experience as him in reviewing, because and I want to get your thoughts on this, Craig, but I mean, sure. I've said many times on the show that when, you know, I'm really interested in like the human story of the process of game development and the challenges that they go through and the stops and starts and, you know, what they wanted to do versus what they were able to do and all of that stuff. I'm really interested in it. But when it comes down to the game review, I'm not writing about the developer or the development. I'm writing about the game. And right. So I don't care how hard it was to make the game. I don't care if one person did it over the course of 10 years and sold his house. I don't care if it was 100 people at EA who did it in 6 months with a license. It's about the game. So,
and I totally agree with you on that one. I mean, when you play a game, you're reviewing the end product. You're not reviewing the process it went to, you know, from start to finish. We never see that. The gamer doesn't see that.
Right.
They see the box on the shelf. They see the game and the thing. And that's it. So, but I mean, like, you do get the perspective, and that you can apply to your review. You know, like, for example, a Majesco game. You shouldn't be surprised that a Majesco game, you know, might end up crappy because of budgets. You know, they only get a certain amount of money to make a game, and so that and I think it, you know, the developer knows that it's a crappy game. The publisher knows it's a crappy game. So you can't really be that nice.
Technical difficulties.
No, he's recording from Skype. Hey, Carl, are you back?
Carl.
Yes, it looks like he might.
Yeah,
he's back. Okay, let me try to get Craig back.
Oh, damn it.
This is what happens with Skype, you know.
We've had more problems today than usual.
Yeah. John, do you want to jump off here and maybe...
There we go. Sure. I think. How did I lose you?
It's a Skype thing. It happens occasionally. All right, so okay. I just hung up on John. Sorry. it may just be that we have too many people on the call, because we've got one person. We got James hosting. We've got Carl recording it. We've got these other people talking, and then we've got you. So it just gets to be a bit much after a while.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So where were we? I finished a sentence, and there was nobody there.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't really understand you very well, so that's part. You know.
But it was something about not being surprised that Majesco.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So exactly. So, you know, like I said, you kind of review the end product, and you apply the idea of understanding what goes into a game into your review, but you don't have to be nice, because these companies already know that, you know, their game isn't going to be that good. The developer knows it, the publisher knows it, the PR people know it. It's like, if a game's shit, it's shit, and you can, you know, you can put that, you're reviewing the end product, and you're doing your job by, you know, telling the people whether it's a good or a bad game, and you can't really worry too much about, you know, that effort that went into the game.
Yeah. Well,
it's it's pretty rare that we get an objection from a publisher about a review for a game, even when we, you know, roundhouse kick the game because it's so terrible.
Yeah, but I'd be interested in your experience, Craig, of how often or do you have any memorable experiences of PR pushing back on your review score or something like that?
I think the only time I've ever had enormous pushback was with THQ and like their Nicktoons games. You know, like it's because I mean they basically use the argument that I'm not a 8-year-old girl,
right,
who that's who they're targeting. But you know that my argument was, unless you actually say on the box art you have a big old sticker says only for 8-year-old girls, then it's a game for anybody. And yeah, and so I, you know, like eventually we stopped reviewing those games because it really didn't get us any traffic. It's just a waste of effort.
I presume they sent the review copies to IGN knowing there weren't any 8-year-old girls on the payroll.
Right, and exactly.
That's a violation of several laws for a start, right, isn't it?
So you know, I think that's the only time I've ever gotten pushback. I mean, there's other times where I can't really, you know.
Oh yeah, don't burn any bridges on this.
I won't burn worth it. But it's for the most part, I think most people find that I'm pretty level headed when it comes to you know my opinions on games. So it's like if I'm gonna slam a game, it deserves it, and if I'm gonna praise a game, it deserves it. So. Mm-hmm.
And Scatman, oh gosh, what a name! Scatman from the chat wanted to hear you talk about one of your Babbage's stories. I don't know what that refers to.
Well, I used to work at, like, apparently it's a running gag on Nintendo Voice Chat podcast where I always bring up, or I seemingly always end up bringing up the fact that I managed a Babbage's store. So you know that was like my first.
And was that where you got the Super Nintendo Star Fox display thing from? Is that right?
No, that was obtained by a friend of mine who worked at a KB. The KB stores didn't put these enormous displays in their store because they didn't have any room for it. So he's like, oh, the Super Nintendo game, I'm going to take it home. And he brought it over. We built it in our basement, and it's just fantastic. But that got water damaged apparently in my parents' basement, so they just tossed it, and I feel really, really bad because I really liked that art they used for the box art. For
was it the photos of those weird like little mannequin things?
I love that. And you can tell, those things weren't meant to be photographed from the ankle up because they have these like they're not really boots; they're just kind of like these hinges. And they kind of make these hinges look like boots. And so I guess that kind of went into when they made Star Fox 64. So they have these metal boots now. It's because of those mannequins that they used for the photo shoots that they photographed from, from top to bottom. And they just put on. So you really weren't supposed to see their ankles at all.
we've had a little running thing here about the Super NES 20th. It was the Super Famicom's 20th anniversary at the end of November. And I know you're a big fan of the original Star Fox. Is that your favorite Super Nintendo game, you think?
I would say that's probably the one game that I was so excited for. It's like, you know, seeing the commercials, reading all the articles that are being written about it, in all the magazines like Electronic Gaming Monthly, just like being so jazzed for one game. This was it. And it didn't disappoint. I mean, I could see all the limitations when I played it, but like I played that game to death. And I am a huge fan of it. I mean, it doesn't hold up very well today, but I still play it every once in a while just to kind of see what 3D was like back, 20 years ago. But for the most part, I would say I wouldn't say it's my favorite game, but it's certainly the one that had the most impact on me. You know, it's like, when you're, you want to pre-order a game, this is before pre-orders, by the way. But it's like, you're seeing all these articles. I can't wait for this game. I cannot wait for this game. And it's very, it's very rare when I'm super jazzed for a game before it comes out. And that was definitely one of them.
Do you think the original Star Fox was maybe a bit analogous to the 3DS in that it's something you see and it's so different from anything you've seen before that it's hard to even describe to people?
You know, that's a good analogy. The 3DS, people don't understand how awesome that system is until you look at it. And that sounds like a PR bullet point, but it is totally true. Because you really need to see those screens to understand why 3D is important. And, now people are like, oh, 3D is a gimmick, in the movies. I hate putting on those glasses and blah, blah, blah. But I'm actually, I'm in the camp where 3D can actually.
Boop, boop, ba-doo, more technical difficulties. We'll be back in a moment, right after this.
that heading for the chat is getting readily more approached.
Man, what kind of rodeo are you guys running here?
It's a kind of a complicated setup.
That's
so
fine. That's cool.
All right. But yeah, I think hopefully the stream was able to handle it. We set up a lot of backup stuff that is supposed to catch it when anything goes wrong.
Right. So are we still recording right now or no?
Yeah, we should be. You know what that's all about. Hello?
Hello?
Is that fixed it?
I think it might have
fixed it. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know if Skype
had a weird message that said.
All right. Well, sorry for the weirdness. We knew this kind of thing was going to happen eventually. So.
Don't worry.
Is everyone back?
As long as it's not my fault.
No, I don't think it is. All right. Carl's good now. James is broadcasting, I think. So
I never stopped.
All right. Good, good, good. Okay. Sorry, Craig. I know it's hard to keep your train of thought with all this going on. Where were we?
The 3DS, you've got to see it to believe it.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. It's totally true because I'm in the camp where 3D can actually enhance like the experience. You know, in the movies, I'll see a 3D movie if it's been filmed in 3D in the theaters. If there's a 3D version versus 2D version, I'll see the 3D version because you get that experience whether or not it's good or bad. You know, you can't get that at home with unless you have like a $30,000 television.
Yeah,
and you can't buy those movies anyway. But you know, seeing the games running at E3, you know, they don't really show too much that goes, oh, you really need to see that in 3D, except for a couple of tech demos. Like, you know, Star Fox, it was really cool. Star Fox 64, for example, you know, you're just playing the N64 game, but you now get a sense of depth, which is so cool. You can actually see your reticle kind of like, off into the distance, and you can see how far away those enemies are. I think that's super important in the game.
Right.
So, speaking of 3DS, and I wonder what you think about this, but we were talking off the air last week about how the weird thing about 3DS is that because you've never seen anything like it before with your eyes, it's actually, I find that it's hard for me to even remember what the games looked like. I can remember how I felt about it at the time, but not, you know, like when people ask me about it and I try to tell them, I can only sort of describe the experience that I felt. But even when I sort of close my eyes and I try to replay what that looked like, I can't even do it because I think my mind just doesn't have the building blocks to do it. I haven't spent enough time looking at it to, you know, with 3DS, the thing is you stand there and it takes like 60 seconds before you can sort of become immersed in it because it looks so strange.
Well, I mean, it also you might also have a hard time remembering games simply because you went from system to system to system to system to kind of – you probably saw about 30 different things if you went to E3.
Oh, yeah.
So you probably didn't have a whole lot of time to kind of soak it all in. It was a rushed experience for anyone that was at, you know, Nintendo's booth at E3.
And I don't think anyone's no one outside of developers has really played 3DS for any extended period of time at this point.
That's totally true. And that's totally intentional because, you know, these – you know, Nintendo wants to make sure that you're still going to be jazzed for it when they show it to you again. And so they kept the as possible.
I don't want to admit that it's working, but I am really jazzed to see 3DS again.
I certainly over here in Britain, I could say this, but are you surprised it doesn't seem to be like a kind of preliminary marketing push associated with the holiday? I know Johnny raised the possibility in the past of like putting trailers on the 3D movies that are coming out at Christmas and stuff for 3DS. That would be one way so that people could get some sort of idea of the product without actually having it in their hands. It just seems like they are not as aggressive as I thought they would be with this.
Well,
this hot product.
They're certainly not going to be now that it's coming out in 2011. I'd agree with you if the system was coming out in 2010, like we all thought it was going to, like they were going to sneak it out.
Well, they passed it then. But yeah. I imagine just some sort of lead in that, you know, was you kind of, you know, in the film analogy, the kind of teaser trailer as opposed to the full on trailer that kind of spoils half the movie.
Well, it's, you know, they have their current lineup to sell, and they don't want to, you know, screw that up and kind of confuse the issue with, you know, like, should I get a DSi? Well, you know, for the people that don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've done well, haven't they? They sold 900,000 DSs in the family systems in Black the Black Friday week or whatever. Yep. So yeah.
So they don't. Yeah, they don't want to screw that up. And they
but with that behind them, I might have thought they would be. Yeah, because it is. I do think as hot as the product is, how successful it's going to be is still going to be leveraged on walking this marketing tightrope, which is not easy because of the nature of the product.
It is definitely going to be tough for them to market this thing because it's all about stereoscopic, and you can't get that. You know, without glasses or without a 3DS, and you know, I don't know how they're gonna convey this, you know, without looking goofy or gimmicky. But I have a feeling that you're gonna see the push that you're expecting, probably by the last week of January.
Yeah.
Because you know, like they basically kind of get the holiday push out of the way, and then they get the returns money. You know, if like people are returning or using gift cards, that usually leads up until the middle of January. So once that push happens, and then it gets closer to Japan, and they'll start doing those teaser pushes. That
you've very close, because the middle of the end of February is Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume they're probably not super concerned with selling out all units to begin with, anyway. I mean, they probably anticipate that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Getting out units, you mean to on the launch?
Well, I mean, they probably don't anticipate having to try to sell very hard their launch units. They probably figured those will all be spoken for pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So their primary concern is probably that second wave of units. And once there's stuff in hand, they might be hoping.
But still, I mean, I would argue that the kind of, you know, impression that you create around launch period has a kind of hysteresis effect. It lasts beyond that. You know, I think the Wii craze, you know, probably kept the sales going for a long time after, you know, the all those people that bought it at launch that were always going to buy it. But the conditions that existed around then meant they created a ripple effect that the people who otherwise might not have bought it were buying it a year later or more later, far later than that even.
Mm-hmm. But I know. I personally am responsible for at least a couple Wii's being sold because people who came over around Christmas time that year and played Wii Sports.
And yeah, that, yes.
You know,
and that's going to be a lot of 3DS is the word. You know, showing.
See, that's. I mean, I don't envy their marketing team at all.
Hey, we've got some questions from the chat. Let's get these up for Craig.
Sure.
Zap asks, is there a downside to gaming journalists getting too chummy with PR reps? Games like Scribblenauts, Fling Smash, and Epic Mickey seem like bigger letdowns than they might have been with a bit more skepticism before launch. I think Carmine wrote an editorial on this.
Well, I don't understand if you know people are slamming, say, Epic Mickey, you know, if it's not as good as people are saying, it's like, you know, did getting chummy with the PR people help? No, it didn't. So it's, you know, you establish these relationships because you're covering games people want to find out about. But we don't know what the final product is going to be. Like, we're only seeing these games in short spurts in preview form. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the game's going to be like, you know, sitting from start to finish until we sit down and play the final build. But for the most part, you know, we got to worry about covering the games that people want to find out about. So, you know, obviously we would want to have good relationships with these companies so that we can get the builds early and do these events and all that stuff. But when it comes to the final review, that doesn't affect it at all. It's like we're not worried about, you know, upsetting our relationships because of the final product. It's because that's what they expect. They want to have our, you know, they want to have a good review, but they don't want to have us lie for it. It doesn't play off that way.
Craig, would you say it's fair to say that if there's a danger there, it's more on the publisher side? That if they try and push something too hard, that they might be find that this kind of they fall short of expectations and end up getting more negative press than they might have done if they'd handled it in a, you know, maybe a slightly more restrained manner?
Yeah, hype is definitely an interesting beast. I mean, if you want to generate hype, you got to do that. But, you know, that's their job. PR's job is to get people excited for their product. And it might end up biting them in the ass if the product that they're promoting isn't as good as they think it is. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, like Fling Smash, I just think that game is crap to begin with. And like I wasn't, you know, not a whole lot of people were very interested in that game to begin with. And Nintendo wasn't trying to push it on us or anything like that. So I don't understand why that was brought up as one of the games.
I don't either.
And I mean, Scribblenauts is that not just a victim of just demoing better than the game ended up?
And that was the thing. I can tell you flat out, Fifth Cell did not have anything to do with the hype that was surrounding Scribblenauts. It was us. When they showed Scribblenauts for the first time at E3, it was amazing. I mean, they were showing you something that you've never seen before.
Right.
And it was like, that was one of the things. It was like, when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I got to tell people about this. And then I told a couple of people, they came back and was like, holy shit, you were right. The Scribble Notes was amazing. I'm going to tell other people. And so like people started coming in. And that was game of the year or game of the show for us because of the excitement that generated around that one concept. Now, obviously, the first Scribble Notes, I mean, I liked it. I thought it was, you know, I think I gave it an editor's choice. I had some issues with it, but for the most part, it you know, that idea kind of, you know, held together, even though there was, you know, little glitches along the way. They fixed it totally in Super Scribble Knots. But that is an example of PR not doing the hype, but us, because we were generally excited for
it. And not because you're close to the company, but just because you're generally enthused about what that demo represented at the time.
I think it's our enthusiasm that got strengthened our relationship with the developer. You know, it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, we're really excited for it. The developer goes, hey, we should talk. You know, we just have conversations about it. But, you know, it had nothing to do with, you know, any sort of hype on their end.
See, that was a strange game because I never made it over there at E3. And it was kind of in a back corner, too, of that booth. So if you didn't go around, I think it was like a Lord of the Rings setup they had in front of it. So
it was in the Katamari Damacy position.
Yeah, they hit it. I don't know if it was intentional, but the Warner Brothers had to work with the floor space that they had. And Scribblenauts got, you know, four sets, you know, they had four televisions to play this game. But it was so tucked away that was also another reason why we were super hyped. It's like, you can't see it from the show floor. You need to go back there and check it out.
Right.
So, because I remember when I got home, more people were talking about it that didn't go to E3 and asking me about it. I'm like, what game are you talking about? I don't remember.
I heard the hype at E3, and I had walked by it and checked it out myself. But let's move on because we've got some comments in the chat. A lot of people are saying Craig Way.
Oh, wait, you want a story about Craig? Okay, so apparently I have the knack for going from topic to topic, and because I'm not a huge podcast person. It was, you know, when podcasts started, you know, sprouting up, we had to do a Nintendo one. Matt was generally the one that was hosting it, but he kind of lost interest, so I kind of took over. And
not
then
really. I hadn't noticed that.
So I was the one that kind of, you know, drove. We had to do this weekly, blah blah blah, and then when he left, you know, I took over fully and grabbed other people, including Scott Bromley, who's our community manager. And he's, you know, he's kind of like our comedy guru, whatever. And, you know, since I kind of drive the podcast, I have to go from topic to topic. So I kind of pull the conversation and go, hey, speaking of this, you know, and I go to the next topic. And so people call it that, you know, it's a segue. But instead of a segue, it's a Craigway because I'm the one that's doing this. Now, you know, so every time I do that, Scott would actually shout, Craigway! And I guess it's caught on. You know, it's not cool for me to say it because I'm just doing a segue. It's right. Everyone else saying I'm doing the Craigway. So,
well, and by the way, Synaptic says that you should start your own podcast.
I hate podcasts, so no.
So I was just going to say, don't do that. Just come on ours more often, and
I'll be a panelist on a podcast, but I absolutely do not like running podcasts. Maybe in my next job I'll have to do it again, but if I don't have to do it, I don't. You know, it's like I just like participating. I love being on GameScoop because I don't have to worry about controlling anything.
Yeah.
And you know, like people, you know, listen to Nintendo Voice Chat, trying to deal with these guys like wrangling cats. You know, they want to all like be the star of the podcast, so they're playing off each other and stuff like that. And it's like people are listening to this not for you guys, but for the Nintendo information. And it's like we need to kind of get back on track.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that never happens here, except for every time that happens here.
So yeah, I mean I like being a part of podcasts because, you know, I do have a lot to say, but you know, I also like listening to other people's stories too.
Sure. All right, and a lot of people, including our own John Lindman, want to ask you about the sort of hype train fallout from The Conduit. I don't even know if you were really involved in that, because that was on the Wii side, but do you have any comment on that?
Okay, so the hype, the Conduit stuff, the hype is all on us, and you know, it was all on Matt and Bozon, because they were generally excited for what you know, High Voltage Software was showing. And, you know, I talked to Eric a lot, you know, Eric Nosfinger over at High Voltage. And I think it was, you know, our last last meet about Conduit 2. We were just having a conversation like, you know, this whole thing about the Conduit, it was like, this was just a little project. And the hype that was coming out of us, you know, and all the people getting really excited for it, you know, they had to actually go, you know, we don't have the budget to make this a really awesome game. We need to convince, you know, we need to convince Sega to give us more money so that we can actually make this a really amazing game. And so they, I mean, they did as well a job as they could. But yeah, I think there was definitely, you know, they had a specific vision for the first game, but they had to expand on it because people were so excited and they really didn't want to let down the, you know, the fan base. So they did exactly what they could. I personally thought it was a great game. I thought they did a great job for what they, you know, they're a small team. They're not a giant developer. I mean, they're definitely work for hire for, you know, they do games, you know, like I think they did Astro Boy and, you know, they did the NBA Jam for, you know, the Jaguar and, you know, they're a work for hire company, but they wanted to do an original IP, you know, to kind of, you know, get people, you know, so they don't have to depend on other people's, you know, licenses to do games. So that's why they did Conduit, because they also wanted to build up this tech. Mm-hmm. And so they built up the tech, then they built the game, but it was, you know, they didn't have the budgets to make it an amazing game. But for the most part, Conduit 2, I think, is, you know, like, just like Super Scribblenauts fixed a lot of the problems that Scribblenauts has, Conduit 2 is the same thing. I mean, they're still bottlenecked with the power of the Wii, but they're doing some amazing things. And like some of the stuff that they're doing in Conduit 2, like the texture work is amazing. Like, I'm still kind of iffy on some of their art direction, but for, you know, for what they have, they do a really good job. Like the texture work, you can go up against a wall and it won't pixelate. I think that's really cool. You don't really kind of see that in the Wii. The lighting effects are really cool. You're going to have a lot of less S-turns, I guess is what they're called. Because if you played the original...
Less hallways.
Yeah, so if you go in the conduit, it's like you go for a section. It's all section-based. So it's like you go in a section, you do firefights, and then you're in this hallway that's like it does an S-turn. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why it does that is to slow you down so it's loading the next section.
Yeah, man.
And so there's, you know, so there's still going to be that in Conduit 2, but there's a lot less of it because they've got a lot of smart stuff going on.
Yeah. Real quick, when do you think Wii 2 is coming out?
I think Nintendo's focused more on the 3DS right now. So once they get the product out and people playing the game and buying the system, then they'll talk about the next Wii. I mean, yeah, there's really nothing coming out for 2011 for Wii, is there?
Not much.
It really seems like there's there's definitely a window of opportunity to get the next Wii out there. But
what do you think about the Reggie comment about, you know, they've sold 30 million in the US, it's come back to us when we sold 45? I mean, so obviously
that was just a clever way of saying I'm not talking about Wii 2 here. It's
weird because obviously always they're gonna, you know, they'll Iraqi information minister solve deny any knowledge of any subsequent systems right up to the last day before announcing it, but to put concrete numbers on it, which I thought was really weird, and also probably just totally fantasy land that they're gonna sell 50% of what they're already sold.
It's all about, you know, Reggie, you know, definitely wanted to add a no comment there, but he did it in a clever way. He got people, he said something that really, you know, wasn't that, you know, that much information, but people picked it up and ran with it, right?
I think it was a return to sort of 2004 brusque Reggie, you know, after he sort of mellowed out recently.
All right, Craig, are you okay if we bring some people on for some live call-ins?
I don't have a problem as long as I don't get kicked off.
No, I hope not. I hope not. If you do, it won't be intentionally. All right. So, JP, are you on the line now?
Yes, I am.
All right, and this is Insano Lord from our forums and chat, also known as JP, and he had some question about platformers, right?
Well, yeah. The thing is, I think I'm a huge fan of platformers as a genre, and which means it's been good for me lately. Nintendo has released a lot, and you've had other things like Super Meat Boy and things. And so I was wondering what you think of the recent upsurge in platformers, and also if there's another genre that's kind of been down lately that you would like to see return, like platformers have.
I'm like, if you know my tastes in games, I actually like the shorter experiences than the, you know, the super long open world stuff. So yeah, I'm with you. I love platformers, and Donkey Kong Country Returns is totally right up my alley. I also liked, you know, Kirby's Epic Yarn, even though it was like ridiculously easy.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo, it's more Nintendo kind of going, you know, everyone's looking at motion control on other consoles. We need to kind of get back to the roots because we've already done it.
And so that's the kind of a
well,
lot of
well, Donkey Kong are trying to have their cake and eat it too, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're kind of stuck. You know, it's like, you know, it was more, you know, how can we make this into a Wii experience? And like, you know, it is kind of like, you know, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, where you have that one move where you shake the controller. I think it works. Instead of using motion control like, you know, gimmicky, it's using it as just a button. And it kind of works out. And it worked out for Donkey Kong Country Returns. But I think that it was not as sensitive. So, like, you have to kind of hammer down a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of intentional because when I talked to the retro guys at E3, they were like, yeah, we really want to get you kind of, like, as a gorilla, kind of slamming the controller. So
I thought it was to differentiate between when you throw the controller at the wall and when you're trying to do
something. Yeah, that's true, too.
But, see, I think the waggle in Donkey Kong is fine as for the ground pound move. I mean, that makes sense logically, intuitively, and also because it's not that sensitive, it doesn't matter because that move you don't have to use with as much timing as the roll, and the roll really should be on a button because that has to work. When you it has to work.
It would definitely be better as a button, and I'm kind of surprised that they didn't put classic controller support on there.
It's astonishing to me.
As an option. I mean,
as we said on the podcast before, this is a Super Nintendo game. It's a four-button game. It's, you know, you can't really feign this Famicom NES nostalgia with this one.
Yeah, so you plug it in, it's like, please unplug this unsupported device, as if
it's not some sort of anachronism to have four-button controller in your hand.
apparently, and I'm not saying go out there and jailbreak your Wii or anything, but apparently if you have the homebrew channel on your Wii, you can actually put a file on Donkey Kong Country Returns where you can actually play the classic controller. I'm not sure. I was reading about that.
There's a hack to give yourself classic controller support, and it turns the waggle into like the Y button.
Okay, cool.
That's tempting, honestly.
but to answer the other question, you know, I mean, Nintendo's all about, you know, how do you classify certain games as genres? And that was one of the things we talked about at IGN. It's like genres are kind of going away. And it's like it's now, you know, like, you know, what's a shooter? You know, it's like when you say it's a shooter, is it a first-person shooter? Is it a top-down shooter? Is it a horizontal shooter? It's a vertical shooter? It's an action game? Is it, you know, when you say it's an action game, every game has action, right? Mm-hmm. Even Tetris has action. So it's like you really can't kind of like classify games as genres anymore. But like, and how would you classify, say, one of my favorite games, Punch Out? It's like, is that a sports game? Is that an action game? Is it a puzzle game?
A lot of people would probably call that like an arcade game, which
arcade
really
arcade game,
mean,
right? But I mean,
that
like,
really
arcade
doesn't mean everything. Like every kind of game is in the arcade.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, like, I want to see a lot of those old school Nintendo games that you just couldn't classify. I want to see more Punch Out. I love Punch Out. Star Fox is a, you know, it's a great. I want to see as much Star Fox as you possibly can. I'm a huge fan of that series. But yeah, I mean, it's, and, you know, I just want to play a lot of, you know, people are like, oh, it's uncreative to kind of bring back all these old games, but it's like, well, Nintendo's doing a great job bringing back, you know, their classics. And
I've said it before. I don't see any reason why they should get, you know, it's like, have people stopped making Westerns or mob movies or, you know, like it just because they were at one point the staple of the industry and maybe they're not anymore doesn't make them obsolete. And and you could still do things that haven't been done before if you innovate.
And that's the thing.
Well, but okay, what does Donkey Kong Country Returns do that hasn't been done before?
Well,
that's one of my problems with it. Like with Mario, they added the four player, and that's really hasn't been done before. With Kirby, you've got this amazing art style that's really unique and affects how you play the game as well as just how it looks. With Donkey Kong, I don't really see what it's doing that hasn't been done before. It's certainly made very well, but I mean, when you look at the incredible innovation that Retro has done with the Metroid Prime series, I don't see any of that in Donkey Kong Country Returns. Well, the polish is there, but where's the creativity? I mean, where's the pushing the boundaries?
I do definitely want to mention, you know, even though they kind of stuck to the boilerplate of design when they, you know, built Donkey Kong Country Returns, they're still doing things with the current technology that you just couldn't do back in the day. And I think that's what's really cool. Because, like, you know, when you play, say, Super Mario Brothers Wii, you know, there'll be levels where the platforms are slowly tilting, which, you know, back in the day you couldn't do, you know, because you couldn't, you know, just subtly rotate a platform. You know, you were working then with tiles, and so you can make platforms bigger than just an 8x8 tile, and so there are little subtle things that they're doing with
current
technology.
With DK, with DK, you've got a lot of that environmental deformation, transformation stuff going on. You know, in the factory world that I'm in now, you've got platforms that are tilting all over the place. That, like, maybe you could have done it with Mode 7, but it wouldn't be the same, or the physics would be that way. But I mean, they're not like fundamental conceptual innovations like you're talking about, Johnny, with the simultaneous multiplayer. Or whatever. I don't think DKCR is like one of those games that is putting much of a wrinkle in there from what I've played of it so far. But I think that's legitimate too. All I'm saying is that on the one hand, you can have, you know, something like DKCR, which is, you know, pretty much treading the same ground, but you're trying to do it, you know, with finesse and sort of aplomb that you haven't done it before, and it just, you know, another well-executed platformer. But just because there's games like that doesn't mean that people couldn't come in and also add wrinkles to it as well, and you know, you've got to like those too.
Yeah, I just feel like it's a step backward from, like, Jungle Beat, which is the same franchise.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Jungle Beat's
plays
great.
Very similarly, and even in terms of motion control, I think DKC Returns is a step back from Jungle Beat.
Oh, it's so, absolutely. I mean, because it's trading off a name in a game that was a four-button control game, whereas Jungle Beat is a from the ground-up design around those bongos. I mean, Jungle Beat is a wonderful game and all that, but you know,
But if you play Jungle Beat now in that new play control version that they have for the Wii, it's not as fun because it was all about that innovative use of the controls.
It was built around bongos. Yeah, I mean,
that's the version you have to get is the GameCube one. But
I agree.
All right, you know, JP, do you want to win a prize? Do you want to answer a trivia question?
Sure.
Are you familiar with the BitTrip series?
No, I bought the first one, but I haven't played it yet.
God, okay.
All
right. Here's a pretty easy one. I'll ask this one in honor of Craig being here. What was the code name for Nintendo DS prior to its official unveiling?
Oh.
The development code name. And I'll give you another hint. It's still represented as an abbreviation on the back of the system and the cartridges.
Project Nitro.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So pick your prize from the list down there and send your information to RFN Live Assistant or Drew MG in the chat room, and we'll hook you up.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. And we have time for one more caller. Let me do a little bit of cleanup here and find, let's see, how about one? Let's try to get Juan on here. Give me just a sec.
If you want to extend this for further than an hour, you can do that.
Oh, we're keeping a pretty tight schedule today, okay. I'm afraid.
No worries.
But I really appreciate you being here, Craig. It's gone really well, other than the technical problems, obviously.
Which we expect all the time.
So, Craig, if Star Fox isn't your favorite Super Nintendo, what is? Because we've got to get everyone on the record with this.
I was a huge fan of Yoshi's Island. I think that's one of my favorite platformers of all time. I think that was definitely one game that I played over and over again.
It's all about the FX chip and its iterations. Oh,
yeah. And that was the game that used, that enhanced platforming with technology.
And it had some polygonal stuff.
Oh, man, we lost you. Oh!
Hello? Did we lose Craig?
Still here. Nope, here.
Oh, Craig's
lost here. Buddy.
I haven't heard back yet from Juan. Let me see if there's anyone else who is queued up for a call-in. Mike. Who is this Mike? That's not enough of a name for me to find you on Skype. It's not going to do it.
Username, Mike.
Need an actual Skype username.
Do you have any text questions you want to ask while you're doing this?
Yeah. So Tyrion Cube, that's Luca. We had him on earlier as a call-in. So speaking of podcasts, one of the main differences between Radio Free Nintendo and Nintendo Voice Chat for me was the level of passion. Oh, boy. This is fiery.
Fight.
So NVC was a great source of news, but everybody on it sounded annoyed to be there most of the time. Can you tell us how you really felt doing the podcast? Was there just a chore?
It was
a chore for you.
Well, I think it had everything to do with the change of structure that IGN, you know, because IGN was all about teams before. And are we still there?
All
right, go ahead.
Oh, man, we got some lag.
You need to turn down the stream on your computer.
Yeah, mute it.
Okay, it's off.
All right, hang on just a sec. We'll finish the talk. get to you.
So, sure. So yeah, so like the Nintendo used to be about, you know, or IGN used to be about the pockets of, you know, the there was the individual channel for Nintendo, the PlayStation, and the Xbox. But they kind of did away with that, so there's just only one person in charge of Nintendo, one person in charge of Sony, one person in charge of Xbox. And, you know, I was left with people that, you know, might not be as up on Nintendo as I am. So, like, I had to, like, run a podcast with people that aren't as informed as I am. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much what it was.
I know exactly how you feel.
So it basically just became me just talking to myself most of the time, because everyone's just there sitting there nodding their heads. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as I like them being there, I just wish they would participate more.
Yeah, I always tell people on the radio, if you're not talking, you don't exist.
Yeah.
So you gotta keep putting your voice out there so people know you're there and you're contributing, you know. All right, speaking of that, we have Juan on the line. Hey, Juan.
Hey there. Can you guys listen?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. I have a question. It's actually pretty cool that we guys were talking about DKC Returns. I do have a major problem with it. And I think it's the music in itself. I was a big fan of the music in the first games and the Super NES games. And I'm really disheartened by the music this time around. I like the fact that it's pretty similar, but I also find it a bit derivative. And I was just wondering, has there ever been like a game in which you were almost exclusively waiting to just play it for the music, and you were just not too thrilled with it, with the final result?
Man, I hate to say this because I've been mentioning the game so much, but Star Fox 64 was kind of a letdown. I almost didn't play it because they got a different composer.
And it's also I would argue the synth qualities.
I was a huge fan of the you know Star Fox the original compositions, not just the synth, but just the composition.
The actual theme for Star Fox.
Oh yeah, it definitely felt like a movie score. And when they went to a different guy, he didn't pull that same emotion for the second game. But I do want to say that I think a lot of people's problems with the soundtrack for Donkey Kong Country Returns has everything to do with the fact that the original game was so amazing because all that music was coming out of a cartridge, and yeah, like it was just so different to what, you know, like, you know, it's all still cartridge music, it's still chiptune, but you know, nowadays, you know, with CD and stuff like that, people can just record orchestral or whatever. They have more freedom to do whatever they want, and instead of doing whatever they wanted, they just went back to the original.
Yeah, it was a bit too safe for me. That, I think that's the problem I've got with it. It's all well and good, you know, and the instrumentation has been slightly updated. But as you said, I mean, the instrumentation on Super NES was really impressive.
Right.
And so now it's, you know, it's not impressive on that level.
I don't think that soundtrack wouldn't be impressive today if there wasn't the Super Nintendo game. If the Super Nintendo game didn't exist back in the day, right, and they brought out this game now with that soundtrack, you still wouldn't be impressed.
If you look at something like, you know, Smash Brothers, Melee, Brawl, you know, where they take the themes from games and they do something more interesting with them, they remix them in ways that you might not necessarily have kind of expected. Like, you won't get, like, what is it, like a Latin version of the Zelda theme or something in Brawl. You know, just it's stuff that was a bit more adventurous than what you've got there, where the instrumentation's close, everything's kind of close. I mean, there's a few little bits which kind of tip you off that it's from the composer from Metroid Prime. It's like, oh, that electronic sound could have been in the Dark World in Prime 2 or something.
Right.
But other than that, it hasn't got much of its own flavor. It just kind of feels like, you know, and perhaps even lesser than like the OC remix projects is that there are of DKC or something. It's so, so safe. I think they needed to be a little more adventurous, and but perhaps maybe they was afraid of upsetting people by changing it too much, but in the end they've probably upset people like Juan by just not being creative.
Just to give a quick answer, because I touched on it just this morning when the review went out, I actually was somewhat disappointed with the soundtrack in the Golden Sun DS game for the same reason. It didn't feel like they really tried to do the same level of work they did on the GBA games. But,
yeah, and I'm sure that was another really sort of impressive thing at the time, wasn't it? That they had that level of that fidelity coming out of a handheld.
He had a huge soundtrack at the time, and then, you know, on the DS, that wouldn't be impressive at all.
But, right, and I mean, you could some DS games sound great, like Hatsworth has got an awesome soundtrack.
So yeah. Yeah, and we've talked about The World Ends With You, which is our retroactive game right now, and that we don't
technically sounds great.
We don't necessarily like the style of music, but it the quality of it has been really good, and a lot of our listeners who are playing along have mentioned that as well. Greg, Craig, what are your thoughts on The World Ends With You?
I couldn't get into it. I was, you know, I didn't play it for review, and then when I tried to play it when Bozon finished the review, I couldn't get into it. It's one of those games that I tried to like, but I'm not going to say it's a bad game, but you know, it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my opinion is if you haven't gotten into it yet, you know, try it out for yourself and see if you like it. It's not my kind of game.
All right. Well, we're about to bring this segment to a close, but before we go, Juan, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to win a prize?
Sure. Let's give it a try.
Okay. How about this one? What canceled Nintendo peripheral eventually became part of the original Sony PlayStation?
Oh, geez.
Do you know the connection between Nintendo and PlayStation?
A bit, yeah. No, I'm not sure.
You want to throw out a guess?
Go on, go for it. Anything you got?
A canceled Nintendo peripheral.
Think about it.
I bet you'll know it when we tell you the answer. Yeah. You give up?
Yeah, I give up.
Okay, sorry. It's the Super Nintendo CD-ROM drive.
Oh, geez.
One of them. Yeah. I think there were actually two different models.
Yeah, well, they started developing it with the Philips after the Sony thing.
Yeah,
after they stabbed Sony in the back, basically.
The original Super Famicom, Super Nintendo CD-ROM drive, Sony eventually took part of that technology and it became part of the original Sony PlayStation. They added a lot more stuff to it.
And it was going to be called the PlayStation. The Super Nintendo PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, they didn't get that far with it, did they? But
yep.
It was the name was in it existed before Sony had their own console.
Yeah. Okay, well, sorry, but you know, stay tuned. We're going to have the Gamer Quiz coming up later on if we get enough donations, and there'll be a lot of chances to win prizes there. And you might get a chance to call back in later, too, if everybody else has had a chance.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. Alrighty, so that was Juan, and Craig, we're going to have to say goodbye to you now so we can move on with the next segment.
Oh, no problem.
It was really, really nice to have you on, though. I really appreciate you doing it.
Well, hey, not a problem. If you ever, you know, have a podcast, you have an empty seat or whatever, just hit me up on email or whatever. I'll try and sit in.
Alright, we would love to have you back sometime.
Cool.
So that's Craig Harris, and of course, we wish Craig the very best with his future career plans, too.
Well, thank you.
All right, man. Thanks so much. And now we are moving in. Yes, and Carl, you can save right now.
That's part two, folks. Stay tuned because part three is coming soon. See you next time.